Welcome to Simple Living Works. I'm Jerry Iverson. It's my pleasure to be your host for the two-part Alternatives Legacy Audio, Living Simply and Loving It. Previous Legacy series include, in episodes 4 and 5, Beyond a Consumer Lifestyle. In episodes 6 through 11, the Christmas audio collection, including things like, Whose Birthday Is It Anyway? The Celebration Revolution of Alexander Scrooge. Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. What Does Jesus Want for Christmas? Carols with Justice. And Let's Get Off the Christmas Roller Coaster. Additional Legacy series included episodes 20 through 27, Tony and Shane Uncut, the complete dialogue of Tony Campolo and Shane Claiborne on simple living and global justice. And more recently, episodes 32 through 35, Whose Birthday Is It Anyway? Inspiring Reflections, Fun Activities, and a Daily Calendar based on Liturgical Cycle B, that is, the Gospel of Mark. All episodes of Simple Living Works podcast are available at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. The 5 segments of Living Simply and Loving It come in 2 episodes. Part 1 in episode 44 includes first an introduction, then the 5 life standards of voluntary simplicity, cherish the natural order, and do justice. Then in part 2, or episode 45, we have the other 3 life standards, learn from the world community, nurture people, and nonconform freely. Also, the mission of alternatives, and something about alternatives resources. Hi. I'm Jerry Iverson, the National Coordinator of Alternatives for Simple Living. I'm living simply and loving it. I'd like to introduce myself not as a model of simple living, but as someone on a journey, struggling to be a disciple of Jesus. As I speak, put yourself in my shoes. How would you introduce yourself, or how would you like to introduce yourself in 2 years? As a Christian, we walk on 2 legs. The spiritual leg, and the discipleship leg, and I mean no disrespect to the physically challenged here. The spiritual leg is our relationship with God, our faith, the inward. Our discipleship leg is our relationship with other people and all of God's creation. That is, our actions, the outward. We may think we can hop into heaven on one leg, the spiritual leg, but we were created to walk on both legs. At Alternatives, we promote voluntary simplicity as a way to live as disciples of Jesus, walking on both legs. Psalm 46:10 says, "Be still and know that I am God." Let's take a few minutes each day for meditation and prayer, with or without devotional material. Be silent, be still, be open to what God may be telling us. In Luke 12 and Matthew 6, Jesus tells us not to worry about what to eat or what to wear. That sounds like encouragement to live more simply. How did our simple journey begin? My spouse Rita and I read Doris Jansen Longacre's Living More with Less over 20 years ago, and it has become one of the most important books in our lives. We serialized it on radio. Then we serialized the Alternate Celebrations catalog by a group in Georgia called Alternatives. We became members, and in August of 1995, I was asked to lead the organization. Have you ever felt that everything you have done in your life has led up to this point? That's how I feel. Some call it synchronicity. For me, it is the call of God. We think of ourselves as earnest but not condescending about simple living. We raised our 2 children in a geodesic dome with solar panels. We wear mostly recycled clothes. We love to laugh. Rita's a 4th grade teacher. She's headed up the recycling project for her school. She's built a rainforest in her classroom, and her students have preserved acres of rainforest in South America. Her class has become pen pals with a village school in Kenya, where our daughter Alicia served as a Peace Corps volunteer for 2 years. Rita's students raised some $1,000 by recycling pop cans to help the African school get desks and books and the local clinic to get a microscope. Well, enough about us. What is voluntary simplicity? Ask yourself, what can I live without? While you're listening to me, I want you to be uncomfortable. Take something off, a watch, an earring, as a reminder of less. Are you a slave to the clock? Take it off. Are you burdened by too many clothes or jewelry? Take something off. First, let's talk about what voluntary simplicity is not. Voluntary simplicity is not a list of rules to follow. There are 5 life standards, which come later. Instead, living more simply is about personal responsibility. It's about seeing our lives as extravagant, even out of control, addicted to overconsumption, and then deciding what to do, little by little, day by day, week by week, to cut down on consumption. We recommend not going cold turkey for fear that we'll get so frustrated that we'll give up. Remember what our children would say to us when they wanted to do something that they knew was irresponsible? "But Mom, all the kids are doing it." Let's try that in our lives. "But God, everybody's driving a new SUV. But God, everybody builds a big expensive house that's 10 times bigger than they need when the kids leave home, claiming it's for equity. But God, everybody has a yard that looks like a golf course so that nobody complains that they're lowering their property value." Sounds pretty silly, doesn't it? Voluntary simplicity is not a list of rules. It is a consciousness, an awareness. It is a matter of personal responsibility. Every time we go to buy something, to use something, we think, "Do I really need to buy this? Do I really need to use this? Yes, I do need a car. Do I buy the one that will impress, or do I buy the economical one? The one that will get me around using less gas? Or do I walk, bike, and ride the bus?" We believe that for every negative, wasteful habit, there is a positive, constructive one, or at least one that's less wasteful. Living simply means wrestling with trade-offs. We can't do what's right all the time, but we wrestle. We consider options. We read labels. We do what we can without letting the struggle consume us. We refuse to do automatically what we've been taught and are still continuously taught by the media. Living more simply can be lonely. Others in our families, in our church, in our social circle may think we're weird. It's important to find another simple liver or to start a support group. Alternatives helps put people in touch with each other for support. It may mean dealing with resentment when others don't get it. When we are making corrections, living more responsibly, and others don't seem to have the slightest inclination to change their wasteful ways. Simple livers face great challenges, powerful forces, which we'll talk about later. Second, voluntary simplicity is not romanticizing poverty, monks, the Amish, or people who struggled through the Depression. If we do, we only diminish those people's devotion or struggle, and we tend to make the journey of discipleship look silly or untouchable or for others who are unrelated to me. Poverty is not fun. 2/3 of the world population live in poverty involuntarily. We have a choice. Third, voluntary simplicity is not living on the cheap. It's more than frugality, far from being a tightwad, and surely not being a miser. In some cases, we'll actually need to pay more for tools that are earth-friendly. Instead, it's a journey to find more meaning, more joy, more fun in life by getting out from under the burden of so much stuff, and to remove the barrier of stuff that keeps us apart from other people, from God, and even from ourselves. Fourth, living simply is not simple. It requires constant vigilance. The temptations to extravagance and waste are constant. It means challenging not just the obvious temptations to splurge, but even the everyday habits that we've inherited, probably from loving, well-intentioned family and friends. For example, some folks say they just can't start the day without a shower. Wash your face! Using more water than we need is one more way we waste. As we question our little habits, we can begin changing the really wasteful way of life and feel good about the results. So, voluntary simplicity is not a list of rules to follow. Instead, it's about personal responsibility. Voluntary simplicity is not romanticizing poverty, nor is it living on the cheap. And simple living is not simple. Instead, we have three parts of working toward a life of integrity. Maybe you've heard, "Eat your spinach. Children in China are starving." Whether we eat our spinach or not will have no effect on that child in China. It's a symbolic act, like giving up a meal. It helps change us, though it does not alleviate another person's hunger. Education and worship are largely symbolic acts, too. Though they don't make anything, they feed our spirits and minds. Symbols are powerful. Second are small acts of kindness or charity. We give cash, we volunteer, we reach out, sharing our resources of time, money, and energy with the needy. We also share with the privileged needy. We share our ideas with people who are open to simplicity but don't know where to start. Thirdly, we work for systemic change, for justice, which is a more complex way of reaching out. It requires seeing the need for change by communities, corporations, and governments. Advocacy usually begins by writing letters to elected officials. Systemic change requires conversation, negotiation, a commitment to cooperation, and constant pressure from caring people. We encourage people to work for justice in all three ways: to give money to charity, and to work for big change by pressuring governments, but not to jump over the first step, getting one's own life in order. There are at least two paths to voluntary simplicity. One is the Christian approach, another the secular, which is called downshifting. A young executive is cruising along in high gear, pedaling her sports car as fast as she can. She thinks, "This is a lot of work." So she downshifts. Maybe she takes a different job that has a smaller income but less stress. Maybe she moves into a smaller house in a rural area and grows her own tomatoes. Maybe she gets smart, gets control of her credit card, and pays off her debts. Basically, she's downshifting to increase her personal happiness. Christians adopt voluntary simplicity for the same reasons. Personal happiness is good, but there's more. We adopt voluntary simplicity also to be in touch with God and to help others. Voluntary simplicity is a lifestyle of integrity, living as a disciple of Jesus, walking our talk. In Matthew we read, "Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing?" Let's ask ourselves, how do my clothes reflect my personality and my values? Did the people who made my clothes get a fair wage for their work? Here's an idea. Go to your clothes closet, choose enough clothes to wear a different outfit each day for a week, put the other clothes aside. Wear only the clothes you've chosen for the next 2 weeks. In Matthew 6 or Luke 16, we read, "No one can serve two masters. You cannot serve God and wealth." We could easily substitute the word stuff for wealth. Luke 12 concludes that one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. Let's ask ourselves, what do I own that is not necessary for the activities I find most meaningful? What would I do with my free time if I only had to spend half as much time working? 1 Timothy 6 says, "For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, and in their eagerness to be rich, some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pains." Hebrews 13 says, "Keep your lives from the love of money, and be content with what you have, for he has said, 'I will never leave you or forsake you.'" 2 Corinthians 9 says, "God loves a cheerful giver." Jesus calls all who would follow him to a joyful life of carefree unconcern for possessions. In Matthew 5, he says, "Give to everyone who begs from you, and do not refuse anyone who wants to borrow from you." Meditate on the many kinds of abundance in life. From John 10, "I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." From Psalm 65, "The pastures of the wilderness overflow, and the hills gird themselves with joy." From Isaiah 55, the mountains and the hills before you shall burst forth into song. What abundance! This is the end of section 1. Section 2 talks about the life standards of voluntary simplicity. For now, consider these questions. 1. In what ways have I already started to simplify my life for my own benefit? For the benefit of others? For the benefit of God's other creatures and their habitats? 2. Do I really believe that simpler living is a way of expressing discipleship to Jesus? If not, why not? 3. Am I willing to bear any social consequences of living more simply? For example, the clothes I wear, the place I live, my mode of transportation. 4. Am I willing to go beyond my own personal changes to share ideas with others, and even to express my opinions to businesses and governments? If not, why not? Here we are at the beginning of the second section of Living Simply and Loving It. The essence of voluntary simplicity is summarized in the classic book, Living More with Less. I like to use body signals to help remember the 5 life standards of voluntary simplicity. Try to visualize or even do the motions yourself right where you are. The first standard is cherish the natural order. Or we might say, care for creation. Extend your arms in front of you, palms up, and take a deep breath. When we read the story of creation in Genesis chapters 1 and 2 and reflect on, "And Lord God put the human in the Garden of Eden to till it and keep it," or as another translation says, "to work it and take care of it." And when we read the story of Noah in Genesis 6 through 9, we come to the conclusion that God does not want the earth harmed. Reflect on the implications of the prophet in Ezekiel 34. Is it not enough for you to feed on the good pasture? Must you also trample the rest of your pasture with your feet? Is it not enough for you to drink clear water? Must you also muddy the rest with your feet? Revelation 7 says, "Do not damage the earth, or the sea, or the trees." Leviticus 25 concludes that the earth belongs to God, and therefore cannot be held perpetually. Think of the implications for creation of John 3:16. For God so loved the world. The world, people, animals, plants, all creation. This is the environmental component. To paraphrase Thoreau, what's the point of having a nice house if you don't have a planet to put it on? Most folks have heard the 5 R's of caring for creation. Let's say them together. Reduce, reuse, recycle, restore, and respond. Reusing means to use something over again. It means not using something just one time. It means refusing consumables like styrofoam cups, and it also means using things that can be repaired. That's not easy, because so many things are designed to break. It's called planned obsolescence. We can buy tools and appliances and shoes that can be repaired, but we need to do our homework to find them. It's not convenient. The Germans are on to something. They're beginning to require manufacturers to be responsible for the final disposition of their products. So when you're through with it, it goes back to the builder. That should make the company a lot more concerned about how the product is built and how it can be repaired and recycled. Recycling means making something new out of something that's already been used, like park benches out of plastic soda bottles. Most of us realize that we have to do something. So we recycle glass, paper, metal. After glugging down a soda, we drop the can in the bin and carry the bin to the curb on Recycle Day and feel proud to be an American, proud that we have done our best for Mother Nature. That's an important start, but that's really the easiest and least necessary part of the whole cycle. Even more important is pre-cycling, evaluating a product before we buy it to make sure it is environmentally sound. And recycling does little good if we don't close the loop, that is, buy products made of recycled materials, such as paper. Recycling can be used as an excuse to keep things the way they are. It's okay to keep on overconsuming as long as we recycle. Wrong. Yes, it may for the time being cost more to buy and use recycled paper. But living simply, living faithfully, is not living on the cheap. Sometimes it costs more to do what's right. Restoring. Remember what your grandparent used to say? You got it out. You put it back. Restoring is putting things back. Now we're talking about sustainability, sustainable agriculture, sustainable development. The most common example is replanting trees, but this means putting natural, not synthetic nutrients back into the soil. This can help make up for past mistakes, but never should be used as a reason to make future ones. Maybe you've heard the expression, a tree farm is not a forest. A forest is an ecosystem with animals and insects. A tree farm is a place to make more paper. What is sustainability? It is the ability to sustain a way of life indefinitely. The way we live in North America is not sustainable. That is, we use up many more resources than we replace. And as our standard of living spreads around the globe, the entire world is becoming more unsustainable. Part of the reason is because we choose to use resources that are not replaceable, like oil and coal. The irony is that we live in a universe that has zillions of stars, any one of which is capable of sustaining our energy needs virtually forever. Even our own sun, which is a minor star, could sustain us for millions of years, but we choose to burn oil and coal instead of using sun power through solar panels and photovoltaic cells. Generating electricity using wind power is also a product of the sun. Some types of agriculture, such as organic farming, are more sustainable than others. But corporate agriculture, which is taking over so much of our food production, distribution, and marketing, prefers to use forms of ag which are currently more profitable but are not sustainable. At the root of the problem is that economists don't know how to subtract. We are addicted to growth economics. We're disappointed if the gross domestic product, the GDP, doesn't keep going up. We tolerate debt in our personal lives and enormous debt in our nation's life. When calculating the GDP, we don't count all the non-renewable resources that we're depleting. We assume they're free. If we calculate their value in, the GDP is actually going down. As resources become more scarce, their value will, of course, go up. One scenario is that as resources become more scarce, the rich and powerful will have them. The poor will not. They will die or they will fight. Eventually, the earth will be so depleted that the population will decrease and those who remain will live with scarcity. The other scenario is that we accept the limitations of sustainability. We live within our personal means and within the earth's means. We buy products that represent sustainable living, such as organic foods that are not grown with synthetic fertilizers and pesticides. We begin to understand the difference between cost and price. We decide to buy or not to buy a product based on its cost to the earth, not just the price to us personally. We learn about permaculture, self-sustaining plots of land for plants, animals, birds, and humans. We avoid monocultures where only one thing is grown. We learn about natural control of pests and weeds instead of synthetic ones. We support community gardens, local farms, urban gardens, and subscription farms. In a subscription farm, a group of people, the subscribers, hire a farmer. They pay with cash, with labor during the busy season, or with both. Then at harvest, all the subscribers receive a share of the fresh produce. We invest primarily in people, and when we invest our money, we do it in a socially responsible way, like cooperatives and microloans. Microloans are small loans that are primarily to women in developing countries to start small businesses. The repayment rate is extremely high. The next R, responding, means that we make our values known to others through one-to-one testimonials, by speeches, workshops, events, study circles, through the media, by letters, phone calls, and email that we send to power brokers like politicians and CEOs. The first R is the most important and hardest for Americans, reduce. That's what simple living is all about. It can begin with something as simple as the rule of half. Use only half the recommended amount of toothpaste or laundry soap or whatever. If it is still effective, then you have doubled the value of that product. It will last twice as long. You have reduced waste by half. The five R's. Reduce, reuse, recycle, restore, and respond. Show us how to cherish the natural order. The next standard is do justice. Extend your arms outward from your sides as if balancing the scales. Do justice may remind us of the courts, you know, to get our due. Biblical justice is quite different. It reflects God's great love for the poor and our call to respond to their needs. Isaiah 5 proclaims, "The Lord of hosts is exalted by justice." Micah 6 says, "And what does the Lord require of you but to do justice, and to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God?" In How Much is Enough, Alan Derning describes the world population in three groups. 1/5, or 20%, are the disenfranchised people. They have no reliable source of water or food, no medical care, only one set of clothes, and they walk wherever they go. 3/5, that's 60% of the world population, make up the sustainers. They have basic, reliable sources of food, some medical care, several sets of clothes, and they take public transportation. The remaining 1/5, or 20%, are the over-consumers. This group has access to lavish, cheap food, has reliable medical care, has many sets of clothes, and they use private transportation. This last group, the overconsumers, is made up, to one degree or another, of virtually everybody in North America, Western Europe, Japan, Australia, and New Zealand. Now guess what percentage of the world's resources are used by the 80%, the disenfranchised and sustainers combined, and by the 20% of the overconsumers. That's right. Just flip the figures. The 20% of overconsumers use 80% of the resources, and the other 80% of the world's population use only 20% of the resources. Now, to bring this closer to home, the U.S. makes up 4% of the world's population, but we use 1/3 of the resources and produce 2/3 of the waste. Notice that this principle is not think about justice or even believe in justice. It's do justice. Besides our prayers, our contributions, and our pressuring of governments, we can help the poor around the world by taking seriously the phrase, "Live simply that others may simply live." By consuming less, we make more available for others. Our consumption is a justice issue. We may not, in our lifetimes, be able to change the inequitable distribution of wealth, nor to make all tax laws just, but we can work to take control of our own lives, our own consumption, our own waste, and then share ideas of simpler living with others. This is the end of Section 2. Section 3 talks about more life standards of voluntary simplicity. For now, consider these questions. 1. In what ways do I already cherish the natural order, or care for creation? What other ways exist for me? Reduce, reuse, recycle, restore, respond. Number two, in what ways do I already do justice? What other ways exist for me? You've been listening to one of two parts of Living Simply and Loving It. You're welcome to share your thoughts on these subjects. Email a message to feedback@simplelivingworks.org or simplelivingworks@yahoo.com, on our Facebook page or on our Simple Living Works blog. Those addresses are given in the show notes at our website, simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Time to wrap up this episode of Simple Living Works podcast. If you haven't subscribed yet, we hope you will now through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Remember that you can listen to all episodes of Simple Living Works podcast. They're archived twice. Access them at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Click Preview or Backup and choose the episodes you want with or without show notes. We'd love to get to know you as a subscriber to this podcast and to the blogs we post new each week. Subscriptions are free, and they keep you current automatically when we post something new. Urge your friends to do the same. Remember to like us on Facebook and iTunes. You can also subscribe to my other podcast, the Common Good Podcast, at iTunes. We do not solicit or accept donations, nor do we sell anything. All of our resources and services are free of charge. We're an all-volunteer organization. Send us your email address to receive the free monthly Simple Living Works e-news. This podcast is covered by the Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution Share-Alike license. To learn more about Creative Commons, click on its link on our website homepage. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works Podcast, wishing you well as we strive to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly.
So others can simply live, learn to live simply, so others can simply live, learn to live simply, so others can simply live, learn to live simply, so others can live.